I'm going to call this meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order. Today is May 5th, 2020. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to House Rule 10.01 interactively. It is available on the House Information Services website and also its YouTube channel and will be recorded for posterity. Ms. Somick, do we currently have a quorum?
There is a quorum present.
Thank you. So the first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes for the May 1st, 2020 hearing of the Government Operations Committee. I will move approval of the minutes. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes of the May 1st meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The minutes are approved. The first bill on the agenda is House File 4257, Representative Moeller's bill. I will move House File 4257 to the General Register. Representative Moeller, you also have an amendment. Did you want me to move the amendment or did you want to describe the bill first?
Mr. Chair, if you could move the amendment first, that would be fantastic.
Okay. I will move the A1 amendment. Did you want to describe it at all?
Yes, please, Mr. Chair. So just I'll describe the bill in more detail after hopefully the amendment's adopted. But basically, the bill fixes a problem where only some teachers are required to have mental health and suicide prevention training prior to relicensure. And this bill requires all teachers to have that training. The A1 amendment removes the rulemaking provision of the bill, which would have required Pelsby to require some rulemaking to require standards around that mental health training. And I decided to offer this amendment and remove that rulemaking in order to remove the small fiscal note that was attached to this bill and also streamline the committee process. The amendment before you also extends the effective date for teachers to get this training prior to relicensure because some of the training centers are closed and we didn't want people not to be able to get relicensed because that training is currently unavailable due to the pandemic.
Okay, thank you, Representative Moeller. Is there any discussion to the amendment? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye. Please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted. Ironically enough, it was the rulemaking provision that caused this bill to be germane to the Government Operations Committee, and this amendment has taken it out. So the bill is no longer really germane to our committee, but it is still before us, and we need to vote on it. So if you could please, I guess, just describe it briefly. Hopefully we can keep this discussion brief since there is nothing in the bill any longer that's germane to us, but it is before us and we need to vote it out. So if you could provide a brief description, that would be helpful. Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Really, this bill came about because we are hearing from a lot of parents, educators, students, school districts, of the growing mental health crisis of the students in Minnesota. And we know that it's not just anecdotal evidence. The school's student survey from 2019 said that there was a growing trend of students feeling depressed and anxious, an alarming rate of those who had at some point seriously contemplated suicide. In Minnesota, suicide is the second leading cause of death for teens and young adults. And so really the purpose of this bill is to just make sure that all teachers have mental health and suicide prevention training. Currently, only tier 3 and tier 4 teachers have to have that training. And so this bill is really just closing a loophole and making sure that also the tier 1 and tier 2 teachers have that training as well. There clearly has to be a comprehensive approach to student mental health. And this is just one step that we can take to address that. Of course, the pandemic, we can only expect with the pandemic a growing mental health needs of our students. I would note that this bill has bipartisan support. It had a lot of testifiers in Education Policy Committee. It's supported by a number of organizations, including NAMI, the Minnesota Youth Collective, Education Minnesota, Minnesota School Social Workers Association, and the Minnesota School Counselors Association. I don't have any testifiers, but I'm happy to answer questions if the committee has them.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. I did have Alex Liuzzi from Pelsby on the list. Is Alex just available in case there are any questions that come up?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is there any member discussion? Representative West, were you raising your hand there? Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to voice my support for this bill. It's been a huge issue in my community, and thank you, Representative Mueller, for carrying it. And I'm optimistic to see its passage because we've had a lot of rough time in regards to suicide up in the North Metro, particularly Blaine High School. So making sure all teachers are equipped to handle this is something very important, and I hope all our members here can support it.
Thank you, Representative West. Any additional member discussion? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 4257 as amended be referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll on the motion.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Stock.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Gomez.
Aye.
Representative Heinrich.
Yes.
Representative Cagle.
Yes.
Representative Lehman. Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Mason. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Tice.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
Aye.
Representative West.
Aye.
Representative Lehman. Representative Mason. You have 15 ayes, Chair.
Okay, there being 15 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Mueller. Representative Bonner, you have two bills on the agenda. Is there one you would like to discuss first?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to take up the HF 27 first. The method to my madness will become apparent as we go forward.
Okay, I believe that's HF 4527. Is this, I don't have, where is this one? Do you know where this one is going?
We have the luxury of having Chair Nelson here, and I just wanted to clarify if he feels that this one needs to go to state government next.
I don't know whether or not he's reviewed it thoroughly enough to know that. Chair Nelson, did you have any comments on that?
I'm looking at the bill here as we speak. Do you know if there's going to be a cost to this? If there's a cost, it does have to go to us.
There is not.
How about you describe the bill
this one is a little odd in that this is the next bill. You'll see why there's a little bit of a challenge. The next one most definitely will be going to Chair Nelson's committee. This one does not have any cost to it. It is purely a technical bill. With that, I will go ahead and describe the bill for you and we can clarify as well. This one, so thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today about 4527. This bill is one of the recommendations of the Blue Ribbon Commission on IT, as well as a recommendation from the Office of the Legislative Auditor to clean up our statute under Section 16E. As many of you are aware, in around 2011, there was a consolidation of MNIT. And as a result of that, there are some parts of this language that are now obsolete. But primarily, what this legislation does is that it clarifies that Minute's primary responsibility is, in fact, to the executive branch, and to bring that terminology into current practice with the agency. Several portions of Minute 16E are outdated, and there are some conflicts in several sections, which were passed following the consolidation. This bill is the first step in removing those outdated sections and resolving conflicts that were the result. The bill also changes the official legal name of the Office of Min IT Services to the Minnesota Department of IT Services, in line with the current branding that we know and love today. But this is merely a legal name change. There is no rebranding activities that are required as a result of the name change. The agency would be recognized now as a cabinet-level agency, which it currently is, and keeping it in a position with the state government and reflect the breadth of Minute's responsibilities to that executive branch. I do have Deputy Commissioner John Eichten with us today that can also provide some additional historical context and testify to any clarifying questions on the language. The bill does also do one important thing in addition to the legal name change and cleaning up that obsolete language and terminology. It also recommends that on the recommendation of the Governor's Blue Ribbon on Commission on IT, it is, of which I am one of the members, the Blue Ribbon Council has spent the past year working hand in hand with the private and public sector members, as well as staff from Minnesota IT Services, to develop advice and recommendations to update the state's information technology systems and ensure Minnesota residents and businesses receive the best possible services. The council has learned a great deal in this year, and while much has been accomplished, much work remains. One of the Blue Ribbon Council's recommendations is actually to make the Blue Ribbon Council a permanent entity, and this section of the bill does this by expanding the existing statutory technology advisory committee to include the expanded membership defined in the executive order and establish the Blue Ribbon Council. This ensures the additional expertise provided by the expanded members continues to provide the valuable broad experience that has been so beneficial over the past year. This expertise can also serve the residents of Minnesota for years to come. I also have with me today a Blue Ribbon Council Chair, Rick King, that can speak also further to the work of that council. And with that, I would like to turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. I got word from nonpartisan staff, Representative Bonner and Chair Nelson, that this bill can go to the General Register. So, Representative Bonner, would you like to move House File 4527 be referred to the General Register?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that was my hope. I would like to move House File 4527 to the General Register.
Okay, thank you. You also have an A20-0755 amendment. Did you want to move that as well?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A20-0755 amendment.
Sure, the amendment's been moved. Did you want to discuss the amendment, or did you have any comment?
I can just briefly explain what the amendment does. When this statute, or when this went to the reviser, there were four places in which one of the terms was replaced, and it got missed in four separate lines. So this basically makes sure that all the language matches the rest of the bill that's already there. And there is one piece that actually removes some language that was contradictory in terms of who appoints the chair of the TAC or the Blue Ribbon Council, and that has been removed for clarity and is addressed in the original bill.
Thank you,
Representative. Or will be addressed by the original bill after the amendment. I'm sorry.
Is there any discussion to the A20-0755 amendment? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted. So Do you still represent, there are testifiers on this bill. It looks like I have several on your second bill, but as well. But if anyone would like to speak on this bill, I guess.
We may want to start with the testimony of Deputy Commissioner John Eichten, who can give a little bit more definition.
Sure. Commissioner Eichten, and if you could please keep your comments to 2 or 3 minutes, that would be helpful. Let's see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if it's supposed to be any.
Sorry, you are very. Commissioner Eichten, you are very garbled. I don't know if there's anything you can do to improve your audio. Like, no, still not working. Do you have another testifier, Representative Bonner, while he can get his audio issues straightened out?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to recommend that while we work on the technology complication there, that we move on to my other testifier, Chair Rick King, who is the head of the Blue Ribbon Council on IT.
Sure, Chair King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Bonner. I'll be very brief and just say that this is.
Please identify yourself for the recording and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Rick King. I'm the chair of the Governor's Blue Ribbon Council on IT. I'm also a local executive for Thomson Reuters in Eagan. Thank you for the chance to speak briefly about the bill, and thank you to Representative Bonner for authoring it and for being on the Blue Ribbon Council, as well as Representative Nash, who's also on the committee and on the council, and then one who's not on the council, but has provided great help to the council, Representative Velkin. So thank you to the three. We will make a series of recommendations in our report in June. There'll probably be upwards of 20 recommendations. This bill covers one of the recommendations, modernizing the minute statute, and to consolidating the Blue Ribbon Council and the Technology Advisory Committee that is already in the statute since 2011. So this accomplishes that. The Blue Ribbon Council is fully in support of this legislation and thanks all the representatives who have supported it. Mr. Chair, I'd stand for questions if you have any, but that's it.
Thank you, Mr. King. Commissioner Eichten, I think I saw you raise your hand suggesting you might be available. If you think by yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hopefully you are hearing me well. Now I switched over to the phone. Seems to be working better. Thank you, Representative Bonner. For the record, my name is John Eichten, Deputy Commissioner, Minnesota IT Services. Want to thank the representative for carrying this legislation and thank all the members of the Blue Ribbon Council who've been hard at work over the last year or so, providing advice and guidance to us and working very collaboratively and cooperatively with us and our agency business partners as well. As the representative said, this bill is what I would call stage one of a rewrite and cleanup of Minnesota Statute 16E. The statute in its current form is a bit of a patchwork of various iterations of the minute agency over the years, back from when it began in the Department of Administration, became the Office of Technology, Intertech, eventually the Office of Enterprise Technology, and is now Minnesota IT Services. So there were still various mechanisms in the bill that really were only there for when OET, the predecessor to Minute, was a separate agency from all of the agencies doing IT project work, IT service delivery. And it vested certain authorities with Minute, along with MMB, to ensure oversight activities could occur. In a now consolidated world, Minute within the walls of the agency has the authority to, for instance, stop spending on a project, halt a project if it's not in an approval state. And so we are going in and proposing to remove some of this obsolete language that is at this point unnecessary. In addition to that sort of prior to IT consolidation language, there's language from, I would say, the early days of the internet that was very bold and ambitious in nature. And it called for Minit to really be in a role of designing a master plan for all of local government IT in addition to state government IT. And while we do play a role with local government, we're a network service provider. We broker private sector network services on behalf of the state and help keep the cost down for the locals. We also provide security, information security leadership, and other leadership activities. We are not, we don't see our primary scope of responsibility being local government. So this attempts to clarify our primary scope is within the executive branch. The last thing I just wanted to highlight and make clear, as the representative did as well, we are doing a legal name change here. Right now, our legal name is actually an acronym. It's Office of MN.IT Services. And if you've ever seen the agency mentioned in the news, it gets mentioned a different way every time. People struggle with kind of how to even reference the agency. And so we're trying to normalize that. We look to the MMB statutes as a model. So in legal terms, MMB is the Minnesota Department of Management and Budget, but it does business as Minnesota Management and Budget. Similarly, we would be the Minnesota Department of Information Technology Services, but we would continue to do business as Minnesota IT Services and, you know, use that MINIT acronym for short. So those are kind of at a high level, the major items that we're looking to accomplish in this bill. There are a few repealers I would call out. These are pieces of statute that really related to prior practice for the appropriation of project money. So when the IT consolidation law passed, it called for all IT project dollars to be directly appropriated to MINIT when there was a change item for an IT project. That was quite problematic because there's always a mix of business and IT spend within any IT project. It's not always spend on technology and technology staff. It's a lot of transfers, unnecessary transfers going back in the early days. Later on, new language was added to have agency business and MINIT sort of determine the portion that should go to each agency and then kind of divvy it up. In the new and kind of current practice, however, we simply charge back for all the services that we provide. And so it's reasonable that those dollars would flow to the agency and then we would charge back for either the enterprise services associated with that project or the staff needed to do the work at the agency, the MINIT staff. So we're repealing those old sections of statute that don't align with current practice. Those are the high points. Again, thank you for the opportunity to speak to this, and I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have. And apologies for the audio issues earlier.
No problem. Thank you, Commissioner Eichten. I don't have anybody else who has signed up to testify, so I will move to member questions. I have Representative Nash on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. As was stated, this is a product of the Blue Ribbon Commission, which I serve on. Happy to support this effort and move it forward.
Thank you, Representative Nash. I don't have anybody else on the list, but I'll give a few seconds just to make sure. Okay, seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Bonner?
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nothing too major, except that, of course, as you know, I am really proud to serve on the Blue Ribbon Council on IT. And while Representatives Nash and Elkins and I, as well as Senators Wicklund and Curran, we may sometimes come from different sides of the aisle and see things a little bit differently, but generally speaking, when it comes to IT matters, we are in firm agreement. And I am really grateful for all of the work in a bipartisan nature from this panel. Thank you so much, and I hope you will support the bill.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. With that, Representative Bonner renews her motion that House File 4527, as amended, be referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Salk.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Gomez.
Aye.
Representative Heinrich.
Aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Tice.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
Aye.
Representative West.
Aye.
15 ayes, Chair.
Okay, there being 15 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails and the bill is heading to the General Register. Representative Bonner, you have House File 4536, and I understand this one is going to the State Government Finance Division. Would you like to make a motion to refer House File 4536 to the State Government Finance Division?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 4536 to the Committee on State Government.
Okay.
Or State,
State Government Finance, that's fine.
State Government Finance, yes.
Okay, Representative Bonner has moved the bill. I understand there's an A20-0762 amendment also. Did you want to move that as well at this point?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the A20-0762 amendment.
Okay, thank you. Would you like to describe the amendment?
Yes.
Or the bill first?
I think it might be easiest to, I guess it's however you'd like, sir, Mr. Chair. Basically, the amendment itself is actually amending the language that we just heard in the previous bill onto this bill as well. And as you can imagine, that's a little bit unusual, except that I am working in close concert with the Senate to make sure that these bills make it across the finish line. And this amendment is essentially allowing us to be in line with the Senate and move multiple tracks.
Okay, that's a good description. Is there any discussion to the amendment? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill has been amended. Representative Bonner to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With that, we will go ahead. So this bill, members, as you know, I'm going to give a little bit of background on both the champions and the driving forces behind this bill. As some of you may actually recognize this bill, it originally passed through the Senate in the 2016 cycle, but it was unable to make it through the House. It has currently made its way through the Senate and is upon its final hurdles. It has the support of authors Anderson, Benson, and Kiffmeyer, as well as both the GOP and DFL members of the Blue Ribbon Council on IT, Senators Wicklund and Curran. This bill is one of the recommendations, again, of the BRC and the Office of the Legislative Auditor as well. Many of you know that several of the members of the BRC committee are here with us today, and I want to thank them for their participation in this bill and helping get it to fruition. Members, in an era where data breaches have become commonplace, phishing scams pervasive, and ransomware attacks have crippled state government agencies, such as the one brought down on the computer systems of the city of Atlanta to their knees, costing the taxpayers a whopping $17 million. The Atlanta attack impacted five of the city's 13 local government departments and disrupted daily functions crucial to the citizens, from police department records and infrastructure maintenance requests to the judicial system. The attack hindered revenue collection and made it impossible for folks to even pay their water bill. In May of this last year, a new and aggressive form of ransomware shut down essential services for the cities of Baltimore and then again in Greenville, South Carolina. As a result, states across the country have taken a hard look at their policies relating to addressing cybersecurity threats to governments, private businesses, including hospitals and banks, and private citizens. The role that technology plays in modern government, from paying our taxes and renewing our license tabs to purchasing our fishing licenses,
is an integral part of the daily lives of our citizens, and the stakes are high. When we think of a disaster or even peacetime emergency, we think of critical infrastructure like roads and bridges, police and fire, but nothing is more essential than the technology that allows us to both maintain and connect them all in a digital world. There's one thing we know for certain. The individuals perpetrating these crimes don't pack up and go home. They will not stop, but rather they will look for opportunities to exploit in good times and times of crisis. Our own internal tracking here in the state shows that individuals are in fact testing our fortitude even now, looking for vulnerabilities to exploit. They don't take the day off. Threats continue to evolve and expand with the speed of our changing technology and making cybersecurity measures a higher priority with each passing day. In 2019, 43 states and Puerto Rico introduced around 300 bills or resolutions dealing specifically with cybersecurity. 31 enacted cybersecurity-related legislation in 2019. Briefly, the key areas of legislative activity include making sure that government agencies or businesses implement training around specific types of security threats, creating task forces or commissions, restructuring government for improved security, providing security of utilities and critical infrastructure, addressing the security of connected devices, providing funding for improved security measures, and addressing cybersecurity threats to elections. Members, before you, the bill before you takes the first critical step in addressing all of these issues through the creation of a legislative commission on cybersecurity. While some may ask if we can afford to take the suggestions of such a commission, I would argue, members, we cannot afford not to. And with that, Mr. Chair, I do have two testifiers here today to speak to that. Once again, I do have Chair King, who can speak to this specifically, and we do have Deputy Commissioner Eichten also available for questions if necessary.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Mr. King, welcome back to the committee. If you could please identify yourself once more for the record and then proceed with your testimony, and please try to keep it to 2 or 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rick King, Chairman of the Governor's Blue Ribbon Task Force on a Council on IT and Executive at Thomson Reuters in Eagan. Thank you again for the time to speak to this. This recommendation for a legislative coordinating committee on cyber security is one of the recommendations contained within the Blue Ribbon Council's upcoming report in June. Pleased to see that Representative Bonner has authored this on the House side, and it has broad support within our council, including the Senate side members and the House side members. We think this is quite important so that a group of all of you, members of both the House and the Senate, can become the in-the-know experts on cybersecurity issues and help be those experts for the rest of the legislature. There's no other place in the whole of the legislature and the administrative executive department where secure briefings can take place about threats that are all around, as Representative Bonner described, in the environment and hitting at the door of our entire state infrastructure. The vision is that this would be the place where all of the detail or most of the detail would be disclosed, the level of the threats would be clear, and that the people on this committee would be able to, without disclosing all the details to the other members, represent it clearly to advocate for the right things in future legislation. We're strongly in favor of this and recommend it to you. Mr. Chair, thank you very much for the chance to speak to this.
Thank you, Mr. King. It sounds like Commissioner Eichten is just available in the event there are questions. So I don't have any additional testifiers, so I can move to member discussion. Do any members have questions? I don't have anybody on the list at this point.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Yeah, I had raised my hand. He might not have seen it, but.
Oh, I apologize.
No worries. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is something that I had begun moving back in, I think, 2016, and I'm glad that we can finally see this happen. The things that we vote on at the state level are often not informed as fully as I would like them to be. The cybersecurity issue is one that, as you know, I work in professionally and is something that I annoy all of you with about talking it over with all of you in committees. It is vitally important that we have a better understanding of these issues and a broader understanding of these issues from the membership perspective. This is something that I've tried to get done. I'm glad that we're here getting it done, simply because this was something that I talked about when General Nash was the adjutant general. There are things that happen in our state that we don't have legislative arms around it, and yet we are asked to appropriate money for it. And I think that this is a good step in the right direction to help with the information security allocations of money and then the issue understanding. It is something that we've talked about extensively in the Blue Ribbon. And it quite honestly, and Chair King can attest to this as well, the people from the private sector looked at us as if we were off our rocker for not having something like this. Because quite honestly, from the bigger picture, the legislature is much like a board of directors on this issue when it comes to the professional world or the private world. Not being able to discuss it, not being able to understand it, not being able to disseminate the information downward is a mistake. So I'm glad that we're here talking about this, and I advocate a green vote.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Is there any additional member discussion? Seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Bonner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to reiterate my thanks to Chair King and Deputy Commissioner John Eichten. I believe Brendan Hirsch is also on the phone here today, as well as Representative Elkins. And a special thank you to Representative Nash. I know that this has been a passion project of his as well in the past. It does serve a critical function. I know we do have widespread support for this, both in the House and Senate. There are now more of us in the IT world that clearly understand the depth of this particular issue and the need. And I am very grateful to all the work that has gone before me in getting this bill to where it is today. I urge members to support the bill.
With that, Representative Bonner renews her motion that House File 4536, as amended, be referred to the State Government Finance Division. All those in favor, please say, I'm sorry, the clerk will take the roll.
Yeah.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Sock.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Gomez. Representative Heinrich.
Aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Lehman. Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Mason. Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Tice.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
Aye.
Representative West.
Aye.
15 ayes, Chair.
There being 15 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Bonner. So the next bill on the agenda is House File 4605. I'm actually the chief author of that bill, just seeing as I have, it's a little more complicated to hand over the gavel by, as well as all the sort of related documents in the chair's possession by Zoom meeting. I'm just going to continue to chair this myself, even though it's a little unusual. So I will move House File 4605 to the General Register. I also have an A1 amendment And I will move the A1 amendment. It will put the bill in the shape I would like it. Just for members' benefit, what the A1 amendment does is delete the reference. Just give me 1 second. I have multiple documents open on one computer. But it deletes the reference on line 1.15 to land conveyance documents. It's been brought to our attention that that is already covered under existing law. The language is unnecessary, and this would also make it the language consistent with the Senate version. Is there any discussion to the A1 amendment? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 The motion prevails. The bill is in the shape that I would like it. This sounds weird to say, but this is the situation we find ourselves in. Okay, so House File 4605, I'm not going to talk about it for too long. We did actually have an informational hearing on this during the early phases of our remote hearings before there was a bill language, but this would just allow counties and other local units of government to accept various documents electronically during the duration of the current peacetime public health emergency that we find ourselves in. So this includes planning and zoning applications, land use documents, and so forth. There's a list available in the bill. As I said, we had an informational hearing about it already. I want to mention too, because I know there's a couple people here to testify on one aspect of the bill, but the bill as it's drafted, does not include interior designers in the list. So I've had some preliminary discussions with the Senate author as well as the counties, and it sounds like everyone is open to including this and there's no objection to that language. We still need to kind of agree on the exact language, but we were not able to get language ready in time to meet the 24-hour rule of this committee. So assuming we're able to get agreement on it, it's my intention that when and if this gets heard on the House floor, we could consider an amendment that would add in interior designers at that point. But I did want to just mention that. I know you're here to testify, and I'm still happy to take your testimony, but that's kind of the current status of that aspect of this bill. So there are a few people who have signed up to testify. Matt Hilgert, I think I have you first on the list. Did you want to testify, or were you just available for questions?
Mr. Chair, if it's okay.
Please identify yourself and first, though, and proceed.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Matt Hilgert. I represent the Association of Minnesota Counties. And no, I think I'll just be available for questions. I just want to thank the committee. You've heard it twice. I apologize for some of the changes that have been made. Really, it's a simple bill that's just trying to provide flexibility to county offices and the customers primarily who are trying to serve in this COVID era. And so we're appreciative of you taking the time to hear it. And I'll let Bruce Messelt, who is the plan testifier, talk a little bit more specifically on what this bill does and doesn't do. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hilgert. Mr. Messelt, if you could please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony. You'll need to first unmute yourself, however, so we can hear you.
I'm going to be Amanda. All right. How's that, Mr. Chair? Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And I apologize for only being on audio and not video, although it's a good indication of that. My name is Bruce Messelt, and I'm serving as the administrator in Sherburne County. I'm also the vice president of the Minnesota Association of County Administrators. With me today is also Ms. Michelle Ash. She's the elected recorder for Sherburne County, and she also sits on the legislative committee for the Minnesota County Recorders Association. Won't take a lot of your time. Thank you for the second hearing. Just want to give an update on things that have transpired since you had good discussions about this before. First of all, Representative Nash had raised some very good questions about security and identity of any electronic transactions. I just wanted to note that we have validated the cross-references of the bill to make sure that all current security and identity provisions would would still apply to any electronic transaction that would occur under the temporary authority. Second is, as you noted, the A1 amendment does remove real estate transactions. They can be accomplished by the electronic notary or what's called remote online notarization process. The title examiners have a preference that that process be used because it's in place. And I would note that the vast majority of licensed electronic notaries and remote notaries are in fact in the real estate business. They're not in the vital statistics business. Third is just an example of why this is needed. We originally in the very early draft had marriage license applications included. That got carved out into a separate bill and has passed. Just an example is Sherburne County alone has done 4 marriage license applications electronically. So even though it's not hundreds of transactions, there are folks during this pandemic who need and really benefit from having electronic transactions available. You know, another example is where it is allowed and notaries can be used. We did explore what it would take to get a remote online notary licensed and prepared, as well as then processing e-notary documents. The Secretary of State's office, not surprisingly, is closed. They're over 3 weeks out on processing all notary applications. As I noted, almost all of our existing notaries are focused on real estate, not on vital statistics. And even if we relied solely on electronic notarization, it wouldn't deal with all of the wet signatures that are required and listed in the bill. Last but not least, just again, a reminder for the committee, this is a temporary tool. It would go away basically when the pandemic hopefully goes away. It is permissive. Counties that are not comfortable using the tool do not have to, and it is exceptionally limited in scope. I would note, just to circle back to the first point on security and identity, ironically, because of today's failure of technology with Zoom, for instance, if I was calling into an authorized person using the statute, I would not qualify to get it done electronically because the statute requires that you be seen and heard and your identity is validated. So it's a pretty high bar for any electronic transactions. It's the same bar that is in statute now. And without any disrespect to our notaries, our feeling is that government officials probably are in a pretty good position to make sure that secure transactions occur and that identities are verified before we allow any vital statistics or documents to be processed. Thank you again for your time to hear this. Thank you, Chair, for offering this, as well as Senator Kiffmeyer in the Senate. And we'll answer any questions you have regarding the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Messelt. The next testifier I have on the agenda is Maryvel Ansara. Apologize if I'm not pronouncing that correctly. If staff could unmute. Great. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Maryvel Ansara. My address is 473 Idaho Avenue West, St. Paul, Minnesota 55117, and I am a Minnesota certified interior designer. I speak to you today on behalf of nearly 500 International Interior Design Association members in Minnesota to request a minor amendment to HF 4605. I have been practicing as a commercial interior designer for the last 16 years. My practice is exclusively in code impacted spaces, and my focus is in higher education facilities, open office environments, high-tech labs, research facilities, and healthcare environments. All of these, as you can imagine, are complex building environments. Under Minnesota Statute Section 326.12, Subdivision 3, Minnesota certified interior designers are able to sign and certify plans, drawings, specifications, plats, reports, and other documents required for our work. HF 4605 wisely allows this to be done electronically, by mail or facsimile submission for licensed architects, engineers, or landscape architects, but not for certified interior designers. Every day, certified interior designers are required to submit important documents like the ones outlined in HF 4605 to localities, building departments, and other government entities. This is an essential part of our job. Interior design is much more than just making spaces look aesthetically pleasing, like you might have seen on television decor programs. Certified interior designers like myself showcase the impact of design through the creation of interior construction elements for spaces where we live, work, play, and heal. We use data, science, building codes, and regulatory standards in code-regulated spaces like hospitals, hotels, corporate offices, and other buildings where codes and laws like the American Disabilities Act must be met and permits must be obtained. Our work impacts fire and life safety, occupancy, sustainability, and therefore we are required to submit reams of regulatory documents like the ones referenced in HF 4605. Just like architects, engineers, and landscape architects, certified interior designers need the common sensibility outlined in HF 4605. Otherwise, we'd be extremely hampered in our work. And additionally, 83% of interior design firms are small businesses with 1 to 4 employees, and 80% of interior design firms are female or minority owned. This omission will put our firms at a greater financial peril during this COVID-19 crisis. IIDA and our Minnesota members ask you to please amend HF 4605 and include certified interior designers in section 1A4. With that simple change, we'd be happy to support this bill. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. and Sarah. First of all, I'll just wanted the clerk and let the record know that Representative Mason has joined us, so if the attendance can reflect that would be great. Next on the list is Catherine Harrington, or Kathy Harrington, looks like your name says on Zoom.
Well, I go by both. Can you hear me?
Yes, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Okay, my name is Catherine Harrington, and I live in Maplewood, Minnesota, and I'm here to testify on behalf of the American Society of Interior Designers, one of our other main organizations representing designers in the state of Minnesota, and we have 600-plus members and businesses, ancillary businesses that I'm representing here today. And I agree with everything that Maria just said. I think maybe we're overkill from what your Representative Freiberg, what your comments were at first, that you don't have any problem including certified interior designers on the list of signers that could sign electronically. If we are unable to sign electronically, that does hamper our ability to do business for the rest of this COVID-19. So we're just asking for, in that list of pursuits that can sign on to electronically on all of these documents that are listed in the bill, and I don't need to read it again because Maria just did a super job of that. We just want the term certified interior designer, not just interior designer. It has to be CID, certified interior designer, and all of us in AID would be extremely happy with this bill because it does help us do business during this time. And I'm also happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Harrington. That I don't have anybody else who has signed up to testify. Mr. Hilgert, did you want to comment on some of the testimony we just heard?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, again, Matt Hilgert with the Association of Minnesota Counties, and I can't disagree with anything that Maribel or Kathy said. The whole intent of this bill from county's perspective was to provide flexibility to the customers that we serve, including interior designers. So I think, as Mr. Chair, you aptly said, we want to get this bill out the door so that we can actually use it and help customers. But to that extent, I think as long as we can work on language together, we have recorder's input, it's clear, it's transparent, and we can get it agreed to in the Senate, I don't see any problem with adding certified interior designers to this list as well.
Thank you, Mr. Hilgert. Yes, and yeah, I share your thoughts on that. I think for purpose of getting this adopted, it's preferable to keep the bill moving, and then we can provided language can be agreed on, add an amendment on the floor of the House and the Senate just to add interior design, certified interior designers. Is there any member discussion to the bill? I don't see any. I don't really need to make any closing comments. Like I said, we've discussed this already once before. I appreciate members taking the time to listen to it. So just renew my motion that House File 4605 as amended, be referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Saw.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Gomez.
Aye.
Representative Heinrich.
Aye.
Representative Kegel.
Aye.
Representative Lehman. Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Representative Tice.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
Aye.
Representative West.
Aye.
16 ayes, Chair.
Okay, there being 16 ayes and zero nays, the bill as amended is referred to the General Register. Thank you, members, for your support of the bill. I don't have anything else on our agenda. At this point, we don't have any meetings scheduled for the Government Operations Committee, but the way this committee works and with the mandatory referral requirements, it wouldn't surprise me if we do get one at some point. So please just, members, keep an eye on your email. That you will be notified that way. Are there any questions before I adjourn? Okay, seeing none, we are adjourned.